Blog Talk Radio.
Forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationship, experiences, environment, genetics, all take hand in molding the immature adult we are today. That was a joke. Come on, we're on the air.
So welcome to the Double Helix, where we examine the X's and Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. So get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is poetry that we are made of.
I'm the Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey.
And I'm Aphasiana. We will be featuring poems from our contest on the website allpoetry.com. We are part of a group on the website called Late Night Poets. If you are in the group, you can follow along the chat to read the poems as we do for the full experience. However, you do not need to be in the group to contribute poems, call in, or listen.
Thank you, Fill My Eyes from Late Night Poets, and thank you, Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, Dexter, for hosting with me, and to everyone who contributed poems or called in. Your writing is what we are here for.
All right, that was a sneaky pre-recorded bit of Dex. He actually is not here at the moment. He's out there being a football hero, and he will hopefully join us after the game. But good for him being in the finals. So our contest this week is about acceptance, and it was Dexter's contest. It could be anything about acceptance. It could be accepting yourself, accepting others, being accepted, not being accepted, accepting your circumstance. It was very open, but we asked for it to be something personal, something that you really have a lot of feelings about. So that is our theme, and we have some beautiful poetry as a response. And I'm going to start with one by Lynn Gauthier. Here we go. This is called I'm Wiser Now by Lynn Gauthier. I used to do it all, but it was never enough. I go over and above. I do better than my best. And still, it wasn't up to par. Now I barely do enough. And guess what? I'm in no worse predicament. It still isn't enough. But at least I know why. Yes, it still sucks. But finally, I'm okay with it. End poem. I think there's actually quite a bit of wisdom in this, in that, you know, you're never fully going to be perfect. And you have to know that to be realistic and let yourself make mistakes and let yourself rest and not overextend yourself, no matter what, it's not going to be exactly perfect. Absolutely put an effort in, try your best, but don't go over the top and not be able to function because you went too far. So now she recognizes that, you know, she can do it, and it's not going to be perfect, and she's okay with that. And I think that's very wise. As she says in her title, she's recognizing, I'm wiser now. She knows that there are limitations, and sometimes when we realize our limitations, we can be happier because there's not that constant disappointment. Now, I'm not saying give up on everything, but there's just that ability to think about what you can possibly reasonably do. So thank you very much, Lynn, for sharing that. And here we go. I have one by Liquid Mind Forever. This poem, here we go, is called And by Liquid Mind Forever. I've accepted I'm not like everyone else. I don't like most everyone's lower self. I've succumbed to asswipe with tripe, believed detritus flossed, Skype in worldwide hype. I've drunk conflagration's bitter bile, smiled all the while. I've felt defiled, knelt meanwhile, beguiled, I'll kowtow, bow, disavow, how, now. I've accepted when I should have, rejected, circumspected when I should have, protected, injected when I should have, objected, accepted another's perspective when I should have, introspected my dead head, bled, fed, said wed, read, med, and led. I've judged the motley crew who knew I too blew in lieu of what few already screwed, chewed, brewed, lewd, talked, crude, skewed the true blue and lingered in the loo. And I accepted I've eaten too few citizens, paid too much attention to their afflictions, accepted my dear election and predilection, and adhered to be, to see, to accept this one inclination to be free, heretofore the unaccepted me. End poem. Oh, wow, that was stylistically really beautiful. I loved how much internal rhyme was in there. It was very creative in the spacing as well. If you're following along in the chat and you can see the physical poem, the way she wrote rejected, it's re-ed, and same with protected, which really emphasized the rhyme with accepted, circumspected, objected, I already said that, introspected. So there's a whole bunch of internal rhyme going on within her lines. And you see that again with the blue, loo, crew, new, screw, skew, brew, other kind of blue, and loo. She uses the same rhyme so many times within four lines. And that could have potential to come out cheesy, but I didn't feel that vibe from it at all. I thought it was, you know, it was poignant, it was hard-hitting, and the rhymes just helped with the flow and emphasize things. I thought it was really, really well done. Thank you, Liquid Mind Forever, for sharing that poem with us. And now, I'm going to say, hello, Frank. I see you on the board. And awesome. Pam's going to be joining us soon. That's good to hear. Always nice to have them as company. They're both great commenters as well and readers. This next poem is called Detached by Stephen T. Wilpin. Acceptance is a locked door, opened by conditional keys of understanding. Dull blades cut deep, stinging scars seep. Clay jars crack and bleed. Few understand battles fought daily, unexplainable experiences misunderstood. To those who have never experienced war, sinister silence is a poison arrow dinging, a melancholic, melodic ringing, a ghoulish ghost reminding others they are not worthy. They cut you out, shut you down. They are a tree, luminescent leaves remaining detached. They never bloom, never have the room. They want the relationship without the trouble. They live in a blistering bubble. One cannot love another without living life, without the pain, the speckled stain. Battles make us real, make us feel. The human spirit needs love, and we search endlessly to want to know what that is, as mankind has made a marvelous mess of it. End poem. I think we have Pam with us. Hello, Pam.
Hey, Afasiana. How's it going?
Pretty good. I was a little nervous because Dexter, you know, had a surprise football game, but so nice to have you here.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Sorry, I just realized a few minutes ago that you were hanging out on your own, and, you know, I had to make sure to go to the bathroom, grab a bottle of water, all that good stuff before I settled down, got comfy, and called in. So, wow.
Well, I appreciate you for sure. While I am a bit of a loner, it's always nice to have other opinions on the poems for sure, and I definitely enjoy your company.
Well, forward to hearing tonight's poetry and commenting on it.
Were you able to hear the one by Stephen?
I didn't get to hear the whole thing, but between hearing what I did and reading it, I have to say that I'm always impressed by Stephen's writing. It's always highly impactful, and I like that he starts out right away by offering up the idea of what acceptance is. Acceptance is a locked door opened by conditional keys of understanding. Dull blades cut deep, stinging scars seep, clay jars crack and bleed. I like within that how he gives that dark imagery. He gives us an idea of what happens in a world where humankind don't accept one another. they never bloom, never have the room. They want the relationship without the trouble. They live in a blistering bubble. One cannot love another without living life, without the pain, that speckled stain. It's really intriguing to me how, you know, he brings up, and I like that, that it brings up the whole idea that there are people who want all the good times and all the good things that come with a relationship. Really, honestly, like you said, you can't have one without the other. And, this is just an intelligent write all the way through. And I have to say, while I'm not usually one to do one-word titles myself, I admire when people do one-word titles, and it's a word that works, like with this, detached. I mean, just the whole idea of how we can become detached from one another. You know, there's so much depth in that one word. So just a really wonderful write all the way through, and very well done.
I completely agree. I think Detached is a great title, and it is tricky to find those one-word titles that really hit, and he's good at it. If you look at his when it says More by Stephen on the side there, most of them are one-word titles, and he has great word choices in his poems and in his titles. I love the metaphors of the first stanza, like you pointed out, the locked door, and those conditional keys of understanding, because it's true. Acceptance really implies that there is something to accept, that there may be flaws or differences or something that's unexpected or, you know, just different than what you might consider normal or desirable or just meet the standards, whether it's for yourself or others. There's this acceptance implies that you're taking in otherness, that you're choosing to be inclusive or I'm trying to think of the word. I keep thinking accepting, but that's what we're talking about. I think he does this really well, because I think acceptance, to a certain extent, is a choice, and I like that he acknowledges that, because I think it's a choice we can celebrate in most cases. So I also really enjoyed his alliteration, melancholic, melodic, gowlish ghost. There was another one there, close to there. Sinister silence, blistering bubble. He's really good with the two-word alliterations that he scatters throughout here. Speckled stain was another one that I really liked. And I like that he emphasized that the battles make us real. You know, you pointed this out too, Pam. You know, love is not all that Stepford, happy, perfect, suburban, you know, what it seems like on the surface. There has to be a reality to it. That grittiness, that conflict is natural when there's passion. You know, it tends to make all your emotions strong. So I'm not saying you should be, you know, have a big war and crazy conflict, but it's definitely something that you have to have challenges for it to feel real, for it to really have substance. And I think that he acknowledges that in a really great way with this poem. Now, Pam, would you read the one by Daniel Deschino, please?
I would be happy to. All right. The Death of Death by Daniel Deschino. And it goes like this. 14 billion years the universe would be 14 billion more, maybe 100 I might see. If luck be real, less than 1% of us, I think, that has to be what is meant by the 1%ers, right? What else could it be? So no matter how depressed, hopeless, or tired, why would I ever want to die? I hope I don't ever find that answer out, although many have tried to teach me the way. But I am a warrior, a prophet, a sorcerer of magic will, and the one thing I will not do is accept. I've walked down many woodland paths and walked straight and unhindered, but I know that off the path through the thick, unforgiving wilderness is still a path, defeat. The cowardly evil specter that preys upon the weak and weary attacks relentless with a bow of conformity, shooting arrows of acceptance until its victim's heart has no more life. Well, I do not accept. I contemplate, and that is my shield. And I do not conform. I defy, and that is my spear. With the armor of experience, I defy the conformity of death and stare at its eyes until it is blind. And for those who read this, I have learned death's secret, and it is a shameful one, for death itself is a victim of its own acceptance. I've had my creative life drowned from a sea of human ignorance, but I've had that flame reborn from a spark that lies deep within. I've had love die in my arms and then cried my life out of existence with so much pain as to make a blind man sympathetic. Yet I have discovered love to be such an easy treasure to find again. All I have to do is give up what I already have. So this note I leave to whoever may find it. And if you have come looking for me, I have gone, for I will not just sit idly by. I have gone back off to war, for the death of body and mind threatens us with every unknown moment, and I do not accept it. I have just not yet found the answer. End poem.
Great read, Pam, and a wonderful write from Daniel. I love the section that says, where is it now? I do not accept, I contemplate, and that is my shield, and I do not conform, I defy, and that is my spear. There's just such strength in this, and those are really short lines compared to everywhere else, but I feel like they hit really well, that the pauses are very intentional. The other places where it's really short is defeat is one line, and well, those really pause and make you think. So he's very smart in his pacing. I like, where is it now? I've had love die in my arms and then cried my life out of existence. Cried my life out of existence. That is intense and beautifully worded. And at the end, he writes accept with the E-X-C-E-P-T spelling instead of accept, which is the rest of it. And I know with Daniel that will be intentional. That is not a typo. And that play on words has meaning. So I like that he has used the homonyms in such a way that he's making a statement. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like this. You know, the only thing that would have made it better, in my opinion, is if Daniel had been able to call in and read it himself. But, you know, I'm glad he was able to write for the show. And I think this is going to be a wonderful night of poetry. I like that he starts us 14 billion years ago, because what I like is that he takes this rite, and it's got a mythological feel to it, but it also has a, like, you could use it in like ways of thinking metaphorically. And I like how this rite takes us not only focuses on the history of the world of creation and mankind, but then brings us into the individuality of the person being written about. I am a warrior, a prophet, a sorcerer of magic will, and the one thing I will not do is accept. I like that, you know, here's, and so oftentimes we accept defeat. Even if our battles aren't ones of like an ancient warrior wielding a sword and wearing armor, you know, we too easily, you know, give up parts of ourselves and accept that defeat. And I like, he's got so many wonderful phrases here, like the weary attacks relentless with a bow of conformity. You know, oftentimes give up our individuality or even like small portions of it. It's because you're bombarded with like these ideas of social norms and what you people want you to conform to be. I also really like that while this is from the point of a warrior, it also, he brings in the artist, the poet. I've had my creative life drowned from a sea of human ignorance. You know, oftentimes when people want to give something up, like writing or art, it's because, you know, people try to tell them what good poetry is supposed to be, what good art is supposed to be. You know, just a really thoughtful write all the way through and very well done.
I've always liked people who don't conform, the weirdos, the misfits. These are my people.
there you go.
Right? I really like that everything that you had to say. That was a great comment. And I've lost my train of thought. There was something that I was going to say about the conformity. Well, I'm not going to conform to answer that. I can't remember. I'll think of it in the middle of the night. You know, that's how my mind works. The 4 hours after the show.
You're right.
Oh, I should have said that. Yeah. This is why I'm better with writing than I am with speaking, because then you can gradually add to it, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's true. People pressure you to be a certain way, and it discourages artists. It really does, because, you know, people need creative freedom. Often if someone takes, if they make a career out of their art, as wonderful as that is, sometimes it can take away the passion of it because then you have to mold it to someone else's standards instead of, you know, going with your own artistic vision.
That is true because you want to sell what people are going to buy, you know, so sometimes it's a trade-off.
Yeah, absolutely. My sister-in-law is a graphic designer, and she hates how specific everyone is because everyone's like, I want this, and it's going to look like this, and like this, and this, and they have it, like, completely in their mind, and she's like, but my job is to design. She's like, I can't design if you tell me, like, all the things.
Right.
Really hard,
isn't that funny?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry about that.
No, go.
I was going to say, it's interesting because, you know, that's one of the rare jobs where people feel they could tell you to do every aspect of your job of how to do it, because nobody goes to a doctor like a surgeon and says, okay, when you remove my appendix, I want you to do this and this and this and this. You know, but there are certain jobs where people feel like they're as much of an expert as you are.
Yeah, there are. And I think that would be so frustrating. Not having the creative freedom. I know a few people who are graphic designers, and they really struggle with it. I know a few people who work for cartoons, too, and, you know, they love the drawing, and if they got to make up their own story for it, that's one thing, but when you work for, like, say, a big corporation who has a whole bunch of people drawing the same image, you have to do it exactly as they do, and then it feels like you've lost your creativity because you're doing, I don't know, it's sort of like cooking by a specific recipe. I know my husband's worked in a few different restaurants where because it's a chain, you have to do it exactly the same as all the other ones in the chain, whereas he also has worked for places where you get to, like, make up your own menu, and he loves those ones because you can be adventurous with it. So it shapes your art. And one of the things about all poetry, for some reason, having a pseudonym, which not everyone does, but I mean, I do. To me, that gives me freedom of, I don't have to be in my little box of who I am in real life. Not that I'm really pretending to be someone that I'm not, but I'm just sort of letting out that other side that I don't have to worry as much. I can just write whatever comes to mind and not think about how that fits who I'm supposed to be. I think that these websites give us the freedom to maybe the confidence, not so much the freedom, but the confidence to go with our art.
I like that thought.
The next poem is by Robert J. Tice, and this is called Acceptance Speech. Who could control, much less conceive, how others judge when they believe? They'll know us from one glance or sound. What have we lost in what they found? If you would listen, hear me out, and set aside your pride and doubt, we'd have some hope of getting there, that even field past a prayer, when peace resides in what will be, not merely where we might agree, and tolerance comes commonplace, envision such a welcome space. Begin as strangers, nameless faces, untold tales from unknown places, arriving in a mild mind, to be received, yet not defined. Imagine beauty through all eyes, reflect on what the others prize. Nostalgic objects, recipes, the scent of coffee, rings of keys. A photograph, the crescent moon, the world inverted in a spoon. The mountainside, a bolting mare, December starlight, flowing hair. A quiet Sunday, autumn leaves, an aria when time deceives. The geese returning towards the spring. An apple pie, how crickets sing, the silence of a telephone, warm blankets over aching bone, an ocean's flow, outrageous dance, the open road, another chance. As paintings picture things portrayed, I might surmise you were made, since life exhibits artistry, but you'd exceed what I could see. From that, I should appreciate, not sketch or simply illustrate, your heart, your art, in part or whole. No, only God shall know your soul. End poem. Pam, what did you think of that poem?
I really like Robert Tice's writing. And, you know, the thing I find interesting about this is he has a poem titled Acceptance Speech. And instantly, I was, you know, from the title, I was expecting it to be like a speech. Like, I was expecting it to tell us, you know, how we had to accept, why we had to accept, what and who and when and where, you know, all of this. And really, it just, to me, comes across so beautifully as somebody painting a picture of all the simple joys found in life, of how we just need to take a moment to breathe, sit down, relax, look around, and just explore the world around us, even the smallest aspects of it. And really, there's a kind of certain, to me, it has a very almost meditative tone, and the idea of, you know, of accepting that there is beauty out there in the world. There is joy to be found in the quiet, you know, that you don't need to be constantly moving. You don't need to constantly be on the phone, you know, unless you're calling into Late Night Poets Radio. I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Nice plug.
Right. But I really like how this seems to be all about just taking time to be still and listen. And I really like some of the imagery in here, especially, you know, where it says, a quiet Sunday autumn leaves and our yelling time deceives the geese returning towards the spring and apple pie, how crickets sing. Absolutely wonderful imagery and a heartfelt right all the way through.
I agree with everything you've said there. I really do think this is a beautiful look at what it is to be alive and appreciate all the little things, like you said. I liked the part where it says, arriving in a mild mind to be received, yet not defined. So to me, that is, you know, you're listening to someone, you're seeing them, you're trying to see them for who they are, and a mild mind, so you're not, you know, sharply, you're not closed off, you're sponge, you're taking it in, but even though you're receiving the information, you're not defining it. You're not trying to pick what, you know, archetype they are. Like, say, like, oh, well, I see he's wearing a uniform, he must be a jock, or, like, you know, but whatever it is. It's not trying to define someone by their appearance or by what they're saying or by the little bit that you know when you first meet them, this nameless face. You are taking in what they have to share and appreciating that without trying to put them in a box. I really like that stanza. And, you know, like you said, there's that part where it's talking about, like, the crescent moon and the starlight and the hair, the pie and the crickets. So many sounds and sights and smells. I feel like he engages all of our senses, maybe not taste, but a lot of the senses. It's just absolutely beautiful. And then the silence of a telephone at first struck me as a little bit odd that it's a silence, but like you said, sometimes it's getting away from those calls. It's the fact that you're not being interrupted by work or, you know, the responsibilities or whatever outside world. You're just living in that moment. The silence of the phone means you're just watching that ocean and enjoying the open road and not, you know, having your mind in your phone. That silence of the phone is important. This is absolutely beautiful, and I really liked, from that I should appreciate, not sketch or simply illustrate, your heart, your art, in part or whole. So to realize that as much as you can see someone and think that maybe they're a certain way, not to sketch them or not as in drawing, absolutely, if you're an artist, draw, but not to assume that you know the whole picture. They are not a two-dimensional character. They are a whole person that's more complex than you can understand in this small meeting, and to accept all of them. I think this is absolutely beautiful, and I'm really happy that he entered the contest with it. This next poem is by Arlist. Would you read that for us, Pam?
Absolutely. And I'm just going to show up. May I refresh?
You know, I think it's mine that is frozen. Let me try to refresh as well.
All right.
Hopefully Dexter's team is winning as we speak.
Fingers crossed.
Uh-huh. I think tonight he's coaching, not playing.
Okay. Here we go. A Darkening Sky by Arliss B. And it goes like this. The scent of freshly mown A Darkening Sky. The scent of freshly mowed alfalfa perfumes the purple night sky. My grandfather's ranch, no lights, no houses, no people or machines within 20 miles. He liked it that way. He rode his horses in the silent dawn. Massive beasts, they accepted his small frame. The stable smelled of saddles and hay and newly planed wood. Nothing escaped his touch. He watched me ape his movements. Atop a painted pony, tiny in the saddle, I tried to exert my will, right then left. No, single stretched my partner. Single reached my partner. The horse loped around the corral, hoping for food or rest. When he died, my grandfather left a long legacy. His spirit populated the vast rolling prairie. His horses sold to respectful town folks in need of a lively companion. I never mounted a horse again, although the feeling of height and weight and power stayed with me. Cowboy ways are not the poet's ways. We lift words off the page only to settle them back in place, meaning what they will. Never reined into turn figure eights against a darkening sky. Never held fast to follow a mapped out route. Never led to water they would not wish to drink, never silent in the wake of purple storms. End poem.
Excellent read, Pam. And what a great write. I love the connection with the grandfather and those memories of the times with the horses. His legacy, I like his spirit populated the vast rolling prairie. His horses sold to respectful townsfolk. I like that, you know, they made sure that the horses went to people who would care for them. It sounds like they made good effort of making sure that those horses found good homes. And I think that's really what his grandfather would have wanted. So that's a great way to honor him, is to take care of his animals. I find it interesting, the part where he's saying, cowboy ways are not the poet's ways. We lift words off the page only to settle them back in place, meaning what they will. I like that, but at the same time, I feel like sometimes I wrangle my words and more than to do things. I'm occasionally inspired by the cowboy ways to write. As I seem to be spending more and more time around horses and things like that, although I don't ride myself, but I'd like to. I find this very interesting and beautiful, and I love the nostalgia for his time with his grandfather. Never silent in the wake of purple storms. I love that it's purple storms. I can imagine that sky and what that means to him. Absolutely beautiful poem. What were your thoughts, Pam?
Oh, I think this is just wonderful. I thought it flowed beautifully, even though it's not a rhyming poem. It seemed to have a meter to it that I really appreciated. And, you know, I like how this does have that nostalgic feel. How, you know, all of these have been wonderful poems, but I like how this one focuses in on an individual that the poet admired, you know, and how it's about that relationship between a grandson and a grandfather, you know, between the generations, but also how it's about the way that the horses accepted his grandfather. And, you know, how, you know, like I've never actually ridden a horse myself. They're absolutely beautiful animals. They're kind of a bit overwhelming to me in their, you know, their strength and their power and the idea that if something went wrong, they could throw you off their saddle. But, you know, I it's like when you hear about people horseback riding and it really just takes like a slight adjustment of pressure of the knee or a turn of the reins and, how there's this kind of, as he says, he rode his horses in the silent dawn, massive beasts, they accepted his small frame. I like how this is that kind of acceptance that makes a relationship move around. And I like in the end how he wraps it up by, you know, letting us know how much, you know, throughout his whole right, but especially in the end, he lets us know how much his grandfather meant not only to him, but to other people as well. And the fact that he kind of, to me, makes it so that he shows how a poet handles words the same way a cowboy does or a horse rider handles a horse. Because, you know, it is that delicate touch. It's knowing where to place them. It's knowing that sometimes we can lead the muse to the water, but we can't make her drink. You know, sometimes we have an idea of where we want a poem to go, but in the end, we end up following it. So really just a wonderful, thoughtful write all the way through and very well done.
You know, it's true. We don't always have control of where our writing went. There was this, I can't remember where I saw it. It might have just been like a Facebook meme, but there was this small child who was crying, and her mom says, "What's wrong?" And she said, "I was writing a story, and the character dies." And she's like, "What?" And she was like, "That's not how I wanted it to end, but it just came out that way." And she was the one who wrote it, and she was just so upset. I thought that was very sweet. And I know writing my own novel, I feel like, mind you, I mean, probably other writers have more control and thought. I basically dreamt it, and I wrote down what I dreamt. And so I was like, I don't have a choice. I have to just follow my vision. I don't know. I felt like I just it was there, and it had to come out, and that was all. Because people are like, "Why did you do this?" I'm like, "I don't know. That's just that's how the story was."
Wow, that's really cool.
So, huh. Yeah. I don't know. I think some people definitely have more plans and control. But I was talking to David Robertson, who's a Canadian author, and he said he calls that pantsing it, where you just go by the seat of your pants. He's like, some novels, I have it all mapped out, and I know exactly what's going to happen in each chapter. And he's like, and sometimes I pants it. He said, my method is pantsing it.
I like that.
I enjoyed the terminology, so I'm like, all right, thank you, David Robertson. I now know my style. I pants it. Our next poem is by Linda M.
Oh, it looks like you have a caller, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I got lost in the... Let's see. Hello, area code 512. Frank!
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, my dear.
Welcome
there.
To the show.
I had a bit of time. Yes, I saw that I was a bit occupied, unfortunately, and I can be on as much as I can, or just stay as much as I can, permitted that my phone allows me to. But I just thought I'd join in a bit and join both of you for a spell.
Excellent. Well, why don't we do your poem now?
Well, I wasn't prepared for that, but that's all right. If you want to,
I can do another one first if you need time.
No, that's okay. No, I mean, you have it up already. It would be disrespectful of me if I didn't come by. This is a poem I wrote back ago. It was based on a prompt, but it was also based on an inspiration from a friend who was going through a very tough, I would say, bullying. So I wrote this piece because I was inspired as well, although I do use the form of man in general, generalizing here. But it was one that I really wanted to put my own self in those shoes. So I added a bit of myself and a bit of my thoughts. It's called To Accept Oneself, and it goes like this. To accept oneself is the acknowledgement of one's true self with undeniable imperfections and truths. Man must discover who he is and who he's not, to be remembered for what he accomplished and for what he failed in. There are many forms of illusions as there are many forms of truths. The answer lies in the relativity of what is discovered. Man may never fully understand the reason for which he was born, nor the reason for which he must die, except for the fact that he will be born and one day die. He will embark on a philosophical, spiritual journey till he reaches the zenith of enlightenment, an enlightenment of the mind, in soul, to a place in the mind where he can recognize his thoughts as much as his deeds that will distinguish ultimately his character. In the world we live in, there are people that never discover themselves, nor desire to know or care, for they really are beyond the surface of the skin. Men neither boast of the conquest or simply deny the wrongdoings, yet what they hide is always unveiled. Is this world a man chooses to define himself, or allow others to define himself, so cowardly? A man must be his own man and not walk behind the shadow of no man, including the image that is his impostor. The beauty I talk about is not that which forms or deforms our physicality. Instead, it's the beauty of the soul and of the mind. I accept I am a man of imperfections, but my imperfections are not my impurity or ugliness. There is a greater need to do for others than to do for yourself. For this is the difference between a real man and a selfish man. I am a man that has a name of no prestige. I am a man walking alone, and I do not fear the unknown. On the contrary, I know who I am. End the poem.
Excellent read and write. Before I comment, I just want to notice that we have a new caller, area code 763. May I ask who's calling?
This is the Duke of St. Paul.
Oh, the Duke. Welcome to the party.
Yeah, glad I can make it.
Me too. Did you get to hear Frank's poem?
We did. I thought that this was a very good write, Frank. You know, to accept oneself, you know, it's something that a lot of people can't really, you know, especially I think nowadays it's going to be something that's very difficult for people to stomach and go forward is, I'm a man that has a name of no prestige. I am a man walking alone, yet I do not fear the unknown, or the contrary, I know who I am. There's a lot of people that are just looking for some sort of claim to fame or something, you know, fear of being themselves and fear of being a person that can just go into the history books as being a real man and being a person of their own character. But I thought that this poem captured that very well.
I appreciate that, my friend. And I do agree. I think all of us have, at one time in our lives, actually we get to do our own, you know, whether it's a spiritual, whether it's a philosophical journey, or whether it's just a personal journey, we all seem to find ourselves. And by doing that, we have to accept who we are. I think that's the first step. If you don't accept who you are, you're never going to get far. Those steps are only going to seem baby steps in the end.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
Well, Dex, that was a great comment, so I'm really glad that you're here. I've missed your comments. Frank, this was beautiful and philosophical and very intelligent. I love that recognition that we are flawed, and yet there's a part where you say, my imperfections are not ugly or something like that. My imperfections are not impurity or ugliness. You know, sometimes it's actually the flaws that are the best parts of you. I know it when writing or reading about fictional characters, I love flawed characters. They feel the most real to me. I like their kind of quirks. And I think often when you make a friend or you fall in love, it's the little weird things about them, things that might have been considered an imperfection by someone else that you like. I mean, for example, on a shallower level, dimples. I mean, really, it's like I can't remember what it was called, but it's like, it's something that's actually technically, I think, an imperfection, but they're adorable. I like dimples. So, like, it's just, it's one of those things where it depends on how you interpret it. And I think that on a, you know, philosophical level, people's imperfections can be what makes them interesting. And
I agree. I am in concurrence there. The actual quote that I took was, I forgot to mention that, no matter where you go, no matter how far you run, you can't run away from yourself. That was the actual quote that I took as well for this inspiration here. But I wanted this piece here to center on the theme of those people who really, particularly our youth, who are going through a lot of issues, whether it's bullying or whether it's just non-acceptance or not accepting themselves and having to live up to a type of brand or a type of stereotype that one has to live up in that, you know, in our adolescence. So that was something that I wanted to really specify as well, although I generalize the terminology of man here, because it's part of my Oscar Wilde piece. I wanted to make an emphasis. I wanted this also not only for the youth, not for the, you know, in general, but I wanted also for this to touch on the very sensitive issue of what goes on when we don't accept our flaws and we are completely drawn or completely just rounded by perfections, and it can lead to terrible consequences. So it's just a poem that I wanted to just give out that message there to all those who are in battling, you know, those days of dread or those days of just not knowing who they are and not able to accept themselves. That's all.
I love that. And as much as it says, I'm a man that has a name of no prestige, I mean, Oscar Wilde is so well-known and admired. And, I mean, your writing is phenomenal, and I know lots of people are fans of you. So even when we feel like we have no prestige. Sorry, what?
Yeah, I was going to say really quick. You made me think really quick. I'll end it here. That actual little line there is a reference to Oscar Wilde. It was during his time after he came out of prison that he fell on ill fate. He was destitute. He really didn't have, he was completely ruined. So that little line there does also refer to Oscar Wilde when he came out of prison and was exiled to France. And this is what I say, walking alone, because he basically was just ruined and absolutely destined to his own solitude. And this is what I, that little made me think about that. I didn't mean to intrude there, but you made me realize, I forgot to mention that particular last three lines emphasizes there that notion of Oscar Wilde, a man who had everything, but then was reduced to having nothing, not even prestige anymore. So that was something that I forgot to mention then.
Well, I think it's very well done. Pam, what did you think? Welcome.
Yeah, this is definitely a well-done write. I like how the write focuses in on the acceptance of self, because when you start to accept yourself, you can learn to love yourself and love your individuality. I really like, in this world, man chooses to define himself or allows others to define him so cowardly. And I think that's important, that when we decide that we're going to define ourselves, that we step forward and, you know, that our actions, our choices in life reflect who we have come to define ourselves as. And I also like, I accept that I'm a man of imperfections, but my imperfections are not my impurity or ugliness. That's a wonderful acknowledgement of humankind in general, is that we are flawed and imperfect, you know, and that's part of what makes us interesting and intriguing. You know, I like how there is that every line is like a tidbit of philosophical wisdom about how to learn to not only accept yourself, but to also learn to accept others and their imperfections. So wonderful, thoughtful, right, all the way through, and very well done.
No, I appreciate that. And you know, when you get on the theater, like I have been on theater before, you meet a lot of people who come, you know, you see them in performing, but you don't know much about their lives. A lot of these individuals I've come in contact with them in friendships, live a lot of insecurities in life, you know, and that is not really seen when you see it on the stage and they're performing because they're actors, but they really have that whole set of insecurity, and you're correct what you said, and that made me think about that.
I'm sorry, my phone was breaking up there. Is everyone still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, I'm here.
Great.
Thank you very much, Sarah Pam.
Thank you.
Dex, can you please read the poem by Linda?
Yes, I can. This is Approval Must Be Obtained by Linda M.B. Humans, we seem to chase acceptance, always looking for it. Most of us, assuming everybody else has found it, feels at peace with how things are, or totally not give a shit one way or another. Not bother to confirm or to conform or change, rearrange themselves to suit. They live believing it is moot and don't consider it crucial while others turn to drugs and booze or crime or all three to pass the time. So when it comes to being happy, does giving in to fit reward us with the peace we think we need, or does it make us feel pathetic? Chasing likes for everything we do is defeat of giving it up, or is it standing on your own and on our own, liking what you see alone? Better to feel free to accept yourself as is than to be a clone. End poem.
Thank you for that read, Dex. And Linda, I thought this was awesome. I really liked assuming everybody else has found it, which, you know, brings up the fact that I think most people don't feel like they totally fit in. Everyone is trying, if not trying to fit in, because not everyone cares as much about that, but I think everyone feels a little bit like they're trying harder than other people, or that, you know, other people just kind of naturally have it. And I'm not sure that's true of anyone. I mean, mind you, I've always been kind of a misfit, so I don't know. But in my perspective, I think secretly a lot of people who seem like they have it together don't really. And especially with social media and, like, all this where it's talking about chasing the likes, people seem like they, you know, that they fit. But do they really? Is that face that they put on in their Instagram actually who they are? Probably not. I'm skeptical about it. I think that this is a really insightful piece of our current times. Dex, what did you think?
Yeah, I agree with what you said. I also thought it had a very interesting kind of cadence to it that I think that I didn't quite get, or like that I didn't quite hit on the read as well as I should. It almost kind of had like an inner rhyme that was like at the middle of the line, like Moot and Booze, and you know what I mean? It was kind of like Assume. There was kind of a inner cadence that it had, which I enjoyed. But yeah, I thought that you nailed it. You know, conforming must feel pathetic. It must feel horrible. You know, not being yourself must be a horrible or must be a very tough life to live. You know, what do you feel like at the end of it all? What is the reward? What does giving it fit reward us? Is how she says it. But, you know, I thought that this right captured it very well, you know, that it really does must suck to be a clone. And when you can't be yourself, you turn to booze or to drugs because of, you know, kind of hiding from yourself in a lot of ways. So I don't know. I thought she captured this in overall very well.
I agree. Frank, what did you think?
Well, first of all, I have to say that the title there, Approval Must Be Obtained, that's a very powerful title to use as a poem. I like the way she begins the poem with simplicity of humans. It's best defined, you know, to us, and it's best relatable to us if we relate to each other as humans. I like the notion when she says we seem to chase acceptance, always looking for it. But she says most of us assuming everybody else has found it, feels at peace. And this whole notion here that she provides, it's very, I would say, introspective completely. It has a philosophical feeling to it. And if you go on beyond, I know it's a format of a haibun, I saw it at the bottom, and it does feel what Jack was saying, but it also has this whole notion there, the power in itself of acceptance, you know. We just get on to the whole notion. I don't think it's just us. This has been, I would say, it's been embedded in our societies for centuries, you know. We have to conform, to a certain extent, to the rules of the games of what society imposes. Or we have the option of going as a rebel, you know. And that at times it's unfortunate, but it doesn't work at times, and it leads to peril in many things, like booze, drugs, and so be it. So it's a the poem itself really depicts a lot of powerful imagery there. And the whole notion of just going through the motion, you know, until you realize where you're at, you know, and sometimes it takes going through these experiences to finally wake up and realize where you're at. And you begin, as I said before, by accepting yourself, which is not an easy task to do for many of us.
Well said. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Well, I really like this, and what I like about it is that it reminds us that, you know, that acceptance is important, but it's not something to be chased like a prize. Where it's and as you had mentioned, Faziana, how it really reflects on our culture of social media, and how we're always, you know, as she says, we're always looking for that like for everything that we do. You know, and there's this real sense of what peer pressure can do to people, and even the peer pressure that exists, you know, as adults. And I like how this is, you know, all about learning to be an individual who thinks, you know, for themselves and doesn't, you know, necessarily run with the pack or go with the crowd. So really, just an excellent write all the way through, and very well done.
I agree. We have an audio for this next one by Rob Azza. I'm going to play that one.
Crammed with Stains by Rob Azza. I can spell the word, I can speak the word, but I can't practice the word acceptance. That weak, spindle-legged itch that lobbies about in my mind and rattles about in my chest and pleads with me to bow to my senses, asking me to grant something to someone for something, not knowing how, in the end, it might really affect me, whether it will thrust me from the frost that encases my troubled mind or douse me with light, once crammed and stained with arrows, whistling past my eroding might. that fraudulent aura of protection I grip so tightly to, knowing it is bunk, knowing it is packed with lies, and a posture that trembles and fights against what is right and what is safe, because safety, to this fool, is scarier than bending over and taking it for the sake of feeling welcomed. End poem.
What a great audio. Thank you, Rob, for submitting that. I really love when we can hear it in the poet's own voice. So if you can't call but you'd like to submit poetry to our shows, we will absolutely take SoundClouds or MP3s. You can email it to us if you don't have it posted online, and we will get it on the show. Thank you so much, Rob, for that. And Pam, would you start our comments?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was a wonderful lead that he did there. You know, I like how he starts out with the, I can spell the word, I can speak the word, but I can't practice the word acceptance. You know, and I think that applies for so many of us is, you know, that we oftentimes, you know what we, to tell people what to do, but we don't do it ourselves. Or we have an idea of what to do, but we have trouble acting it out. And I really like also the frost in the face of my skull. Light once crammed and sang with arrows whistling past my eroding might. I like the phrase eroding might, that he used the imagery of the arrows whistling past. It's the whole idea that what we just missed or what just missed us, that narrow escape. You know, it just really, he's always got this way of having edgy and hard-hitting lines that really just, you know, like, well, they hit hard, they make an impact, and they make you think about the consequences of losing ourselves, the consequences of, you know, not practicing, you know, acceptance. And so just excellent writing, very well done.
Excellent comment. Thank you, Pam. And Dexter, what did you think of the poem?
Yeah, I like how we kind of took it from a different side or an angle. You know, for the most part, we talk about acceptance as being kind of a positive thing. I like how he took it as kind of a negative thing, as kind of a weak thing, or in his mind. And understanding that maybe it would make his life better if he practiced acceptance, but he just hates the way that feels or that sounds, where he even alludes to it as bending over. He hates it so much that he can't even imagine kind of, or he just doesn't even want to imagine doing it. And so he, and acceptance can be a negative thing, you know, when you're accepting less of yourself, when you're accepting things for as is, and it, when they really could be better. You know, acceptance a lot of times, like I said, for a lot of the rights was put into a positive light. I enjoy how Rob kind of put it into a negative light in his right. And like Pam said, it was kind of hard and edgy, but I thought it was very well done.
I agree. I like this kind of different perspective on it. And I like the way that he describes it, spindle-legged itch. That's a really fun way of wording it. And I really liked my eroding might, that fraudulent aura of protection I grip so tightly to, knowing it's bunk. Fraudulent aura of protection. I absolutely love that line. This is an interesting perspective. I like that. It stands out as different from the other poems. It's not necessarily that it disagrees with the other poems. It's just a different side of acceptance. I like that we have the full picture tonight. We have all different kind of interpretations, because acceptance comes in many forms, and there's, you know, different sides of it. And there are kinds of acceptance. about, you know, just kind of settling that that are negative, and you know, we don't have to accept less necessarily. So I think this is brilliant. And Frank, what did you think?
Yes, after hearing those comments, I too came to a conclusion as well. I would say to somewhat extent that conclusion, but I also felt that there was a sense of non-acceptance here, a sense of what Dexter was saying of being negative. You know, there is always that sense of the ego at times that gets involved, and it does, you know, somewhat reduces our possibilities of accepting, you know, who we are. There's so much about human character, the human, you know, traits that we bear, you know, our own humanity, that at times that we do struggle to realize, although we do try to balance one or the either positivity or negativity. There is at times experiences that we share, experiences that we endure, that make us tend to make that one side or the other, and it does mark our experience, our life. You know, this is a very visceral poem. There's so much, you know, in this poem. It's impactful. It's powerful. It's gripping, but it also has, I would say, it does have the insight of the poet here and how he feels. Now, those two lines, you look at those two lines, I can spell the word, I can speak the word, or three, but I can't practice the word acceptance. That to me tells me the whole poem in itself and what he's trying to grasp here with the message.
Yes, very important lines there. Dexter, what are we going to do next?
Would you read the next one by Elizabeth Murmy? Murmuring.
Hindsight by Elizabeth Murmuring. This is not the life I planned. I asked time for roses and wine. She gave me goats and gruel. Aspirations of elegance surrounded to solidity and all my erring agendas coalesced into full-bellied autumns. This is not the home I dreamed. I drew gables and garrets in the margins and gothic fences on all my gardens. I'm sure there were crushed silk curtains opening on summer croquet lawns, but these cherished windows are all wonky and muddy, and boots lounge by the back door. This is not the path I chose. There were no mountains in my memory, none of these arduous summits to ascend. My ambitions were for ease, with someone else to wash the dishes, to be sure. No graded riding guides my feet, yet the climb brings me closer to the sun. This is not the me I imagined. So much filth under fingernails, so little time for tulle hats and tea. In dark mirrors, I saw diamonds, sparkling wit and wide smiles. But goats don't gossip with Elan, and I've gone and misplaced my tiara. No, this is not the life I planned. But I've made my peace with youth's wanting. She never did know what was good for her. End poem. Oh, I like that ending, kind of scolding her younger self. This is a very playful poem, and, you know, it has those truths of, like, I did not realize being an adult involved doing so many dishes, and, you know, how we're taken up by the chores, and, you know, I know for sure where I live is not what I pictured. You know, this little apartment is okay, but it's certainly not the house of my dreams. And, you know, things don't go the way we imagine when we're young, unless we're very lucky. And she has kind of a flair to the way that she describes it, kind of making fun of herself for the grand plans that she had that were probably pretty unrealistic for the life that she had. And I think that the way she says, I've gone and misplaced my tiara, is very playful, as she's recognizing that, you know, this is that's not who I am. And that's okay that it's not who I am. I really enjoyed this. Pam, what did you think?
I need, if possible, a little more time to read because I just got back.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, absolutely. Dexter, what did you think?
Yeah, I always really enjoy Elizabeth's writes. I'm glad she wrote again. But, yeah, this one is very playful. But it also just has such just great wording and language that she uses throughout. And her descriptive words, you know, the Gothic fences and crushed silk curtains and summer croquet lawns and these cherished windows and muddy boots. I mean, she just packs so much description into her writes that they just almost tickle your senses and your memory banks so that you can picture them too, or that you can remember kind of having these kinds of fantasies, even though I'm not a woman as far as the tiara and all these things. But you can just imagine her as a little girl, want, you know, what she was wanting and what she's picturing so well. But I just really enjoyed it, and she brought it all together on the way that this poem ended. I just thought it was a fantastic write.
I agree. And Frank, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this took me to, I would say, the epoch of I would say 1840s, you know, during that time period of Jane Eyre, you know, when many young, young ladies aspire to have, you know, so much in life, you know, aspire to have perhaps a bit of wealth, you know, establishment in that, and yet end up with the opposite. But what I did enjoy about this piece here was that acknowledgement in the end of fine, you know, because she does stress it, you know, she makes it just, it's a very clever thing. She says in each and every line, she starts off with this, as to emphasize that this was not what she ventured, this is not what she dreamt of before. But when she ends this in the last stanza there, she said, but I made my peace of use wanting. She never did know what was good for her. You know, just, you come to, you know, time, age brings wisdom. And it also brings reflection of what life experiences are or were in this case. And when you can acknowledge that you have come to peace, you know, find that serenity, you know, with the life that perhaps you didn't aspire, but the life that you have, that is powerful. You know, it's a realization that many struggle to accept. But she seems to have done that to some degree in this poem.
Yes, I think she has. And you're right, I was picturing a Jane Eyre-style timeline. And I think, you know, maybe as a young girl, she read those stories. So even if it's a more contemporary person, they kind of idolized that that time period and imagined themselves in that way. Dexter, what are we reading next?
Oh, you can go back to Pam. I don't know if she got time to read it or not.
Oh, that's right. Pam, did you get a chance?
I did, yes, and I very much enjoyed this. It was delightful. It was very relatable. I like how, you know, you were mentioning earlier, Faziana, how there's just been so many different takes on the word and the concept of acceptance. And I like how this kind of goes in to the idea of acceptance of how life turned out or circumstances, that it has that kind of humor and whimsy that looks back on, you know, the mind of our youth, that maybe, like, because we had favorite books or favorite movies, we imagined what our life would be like. And then when we realize, you know, that we're not wearing the tiara, you know, there's muddy boots on the back porch, it's just that kind of wonderful acceptance of that life took unexpected paths from where we originally intended it to be. So just an excellent write and very well done.
I agree.
And Frank, I got the next one. Frank, I have the next one up by Peter Solway. If I could ask you to give that a read.
All right. This is a piece called Acceptance Speech, and it goes like this. Well, great hall friends, store your applause, be seated again. So glad to be here tonight, the world ref fans so attentive. Blonde still standing, infused, clapping, all makes my life. Even more worth living, no things bad boy Jack that would sound like boisting. Oh, shut the fuck up, clapper in front, come to see, trying to talk, think, remembering my lines. Oh, yes, shiny poem. Girlfriends to have a bit of R&R, rest and lubrication. On his toe, Jack Dean got it wrong. Not a stork mother was a giant cow. But not to ramble, said all my finest fans to other artists sleep. To dream of a Barry Manilow concert, novelled by Barbara Cotlin, TV evangelism. No, no, no. My devoted audience's attention stolen indifferent, swinging the microphone in option, in the boat.
Great read,
excellent
Frank.
Hey, welcome.
Go for it, Dex.
yeah, that was a great read, Frank. You know, I thought that this was a very interesting read, and I had just briefly read this before it came up. You know, there's a couple of ways that this could be interpreted, and Peter is always king of the abstract. He's always king of edginess and laying it out there and references. So they always take a little a few times to read and be able to interpret it. Now, I think that this very well could be him accepting kind of almost the misfit crowd that maybe enjoys his poems or enjoys his rights, and how he kind of almost would, in, you know, and he's kind of accepting that these people are just kind of goofy and rambling and things like this, and this is the you know, maybe the dream of this Barry Manilow concert, but yet he's writing poems to these different people here online, and it's not quite the way that his fame or the way that he would be embraced by the population. It's not how he pictured it. But he keeps everybody guessing so much that, you know, swinging at the microphone an option, you know, it's like he keeps the crowd guessing so much that even at the acceptance speech, you know, you don't know what could possibly crack off. That's kind of my first interpretation of what it is. You know, I really enjoy Peter's rights, but this one is going to take me a couple of times. I hope I kind of got in the area of what he was going for.
I think that was a great comment. I kind of like when he's, you know, frustrated with the person who's clapping because he can't think about what he's supposed to do now. He's like, you know, shut up. I'm trying to talk and think. I had this group of kids today. I think they were grade threes. And they were lovely, and they were so enthusiastic. But we were singing this one song, and the one boy kept going, yeah, this is awesome. But like, but the thing is, I kept forgetting my lines because he was like super enthused. I would say is probably diversely abled. I don't know. He was so enthusiastic about everything. And then I was reading them a story, and he kept having like outbursts of like, I like that character, or something like. And so it was like, I loved his enthusiasm, but at the same time, I was like, now I don't remember what I'm saying. So I just can't help think of that when I'm reading that part. I'm like, I'm glad that you're into it, but also shut up. No, he was a sweetheart, but still. I like that they say, he says, ah, yes, shiny plutonium. And then he's talking about the girls, and I kind of wondered if it was like a play on like platinum, you know, like platinum hair. But plutonium is quite dangerous, and it was sort of like the danger of these platinum girls and the rest and lubrication that they entice him to. I don't know. I took that as a play on words. I'm not totally sure, but that's just kind of where my mind went. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I always find Peter's always writes interesting and thought-provoking. I like that he went with the idea of someone giving an acceptance speech. I, too, was really focused in on that part with the plutonium, and I thought about the play on words, but then I thought, you know, maybe this is actually supposed to be the whole idea of somebody making a speech after they had discovered or used something such as a poison such as plutonium or radium, and, you know, that, you know, in their heads they're making this acceptance speech because everybody sees them as this just wonderful, intelligent scientist, person who discovered something new, and in the inside they just know that, you know, everybody is simply just following along in the moment. You know, he's just always, again, another one that has some hard-hitting lines. I like that he went with that whole acceptance speech thing. Oftentimes, acceptance speeches nowadays, like if you watch, like, award shows, they seem so mundane so cliche. I remember years ago I was watching, and I mean, honestly, this was years ago because I was actually, well, I must have been like high school or something, but still in school. And there was somebody was this guy had gotten an award for a foreign film. And I have never since that time seen anybody so enthusiastically, like I think I can't remember where he was from, I'm not even going to try to do his accent, but he all over and over again kept blowing kisses, you know, saying thank you, thank you, thank you. And people seem to almost lack that enthusiasm. And what I particularly like is, well, I like this all the way through, and there's much to dig into. I think it's something different from every line, but near the end where he mentions, the TV evangelism, how so oftentimes, you know, people can talk us into giving things away that we shouldn't necessarily be giving away for reasons we shouldn't be giving it away. And then I like the question at the end, swinging the microphone an option, because to me that's very humorous. You know, instantly I think of, you know, when you're watching a concert and they start swinging the microphone like and doing dances, like you almost have a Mick Jagger type feel right there in that line. And it's to me that ending is the whole idea of somebody just kind of realized they have nowhere else to go with their speech. They have no other way to distract people from how much they've truly screwed up. And so they're just hoping beyond hope that some sort of distraction that'll work. That's what I get from it anyways. And so just a really thought-provoking write and well done.
You have figured out my secret, Pam. That was my microphone move.
Did you say that there was a foreign film? Did you say that guy was accepting an award for a porn film?
Foreign.
Oh.
Foreign. Oh, I thought you said foreign film.
With an F.
It was blowing kisses in the crowd or whatever, you know? Anyway, my bad. I misheard it.
You must have heard the lubrication there, my friend.
He got a little excited. Frank, what do you think of the poem?
All right. Well, I'm going to get back on focus here. I thought the poem really was, well, first of all, I've gone through my share of experiences like this. And the one thing my actor coach used to say is that from the get-go, you need to captivate your audience, and you do that with a stare. And you know then where your audience at. This poem really just had me going there to just realize how much, you know, when you go to do a speech there, you know, you do so much of what is preparation, but yet at the same time, you can't prepare it as completely as the reaction of others. You can control your reactions, but you don't know if you really can't control the reactions of others. You know? And so it can be disruptive. And at times when you're on the stage there and you go through these episodes of just rudeness or utter, I would say, anxiety, you have to compose yourself and find, you know, so what one does is focus. Because if you don't focus, you usually get distracted. And I can see how one can easily be distracted here. The way he described it, it's a witty poem, and it's humor in this poem. And I think I would say that he epitomizes him with his brand of poetry, if I can say. And with this, I have to run, my friends. I just want to say I had a great time being on there, great company on all of you three, and it's always a pleasure to be on Late Night Poets. Take care, my friends.
Thank you for calling.
Yep, thank
have
you,
a good
Frank.
Night.
Take care. Buenas noches. Take care.
And on that note, Pam, if I could get you to read the next one with Babbler.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. This is Winning by Babbler. And it goes like this. Off-white grimace pasted over lips cracked from biting, holding back serrated words, smacking for blood letter writing. Nothing some Botox can't fix. Real quick, look sick. And another cheap trick. Homeless people on the silver screen still have all their teeth lined to porcelain soldiers, stashing the receipts behind poses struck for the lens. Doing backbends for fake friends, waiting for the photo shoot to end. Isn't she a lovely dancer? The human hanger with countable ribs, sobbing in the dark, illuminated like a 2 a.m. refrigerator light, dark, spotlighting condiments on the mark. Looks so good in Louis Vuitton, as long as she keeps on keeping it on. Barbie Tierra stapled on a bleach bottle blonde. The wolf is calling you a sheep, like softness is something weak, but everything is so hard, played out with no regard, like feelings aren't a part of who we are. Bah, bah, badass, have you any soul? Sold it for some scripts and three-line roll. People only pay for fantasies, dialed-up versions of a hooker, makeup caked on a barefaced looker whose diamond is a little rough. Peddling good times for $50, do it for the camera and you're starstruck. They say she's cheap, but she isn't selling much. Most of them just want to be touched. They haven't been in years. Dowsing sweet nothings in glasses of clear. Problems parade themselves down Main Street. Pills and hyper-focus, wrapped in Versace. Self-loathing buried under the skirting. With the $3,000 impulse buy, taking the sting out of the hurting. It's everything, no cap. Ignore the fine print, that's a wrap. Honored with flowers and keys to the city, my goodness, she's so pretty. As she drowns in responsibilities, rebranded as winning. The voices say it'll be okay. Normal isn't real. This is my acceptance speech. End poem.
I love this poem so much. I read it yesterday, and I was just, fangirling out about it, and I didn't even realize that it was for this contest. Babbler is amazing. She hadn't written for a while, and it's so great to see her writing again. The parts that I really loved were lips cracked from biting, holding back serrated words. The idea of the words being so sharp and, like, you know, trying to swallow that outburst that might be a little bit too mean and hurting yourself in the process. I loved lines of porcelain soldiers to describe the teeth, and human hanger with countable ribs. Like, wow, what a way to describe that kind of emaciated person whose clothes are just, you know, hanging off her, and she's so thin that you can see everything. I loved, loved, loved the ba ba badass. Have you any soul? that was so creative and fun. And I mean, I'm a nursery rhyme nerd, so turned it into something dark, and I just love it. This was amazing. Babbler is awesome. Dex, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that this was a fantastic write and just very hard-hitting. Like you said, very creative with each line and just how that she went about this. But it had a subtle rhyme to it that made the whole thing flow very well. But she isn't selling much. Most of them just want to be touched. They haven't been in years. You know, just somebody that is basically kind of selling out and almost like, you know, this fan site that's like OnlyFans or something where, you know, these girls are getting kind of naked and stuff. But just to be, you know, you get $20 to, or, you know, you get $50 to have to touch yourself while some guy watches. And then, you know, you get to wear your Versace down the street and all of these kinds of things. You know, is what's kind of commonly going on. Normal isn't real. This is my acceptance speech. Another acceptance speech, but this is so, from such a totally different angle. This one's a lot to take in, but I just thought that this was a very telling write, like a sign of the times almost kind of write. Very well done.
I completely agree. And we have three more that I really want to get through, so I'm going to limit it to two comments per thing. Pam, you'll get to comment on the next one for sure. Dex, can you bring us to our next poem?
Yep, I'm going to read this next one by Pam 8. This is Thinking of Acceptance. I am thinking of acceptance and think of an overturned baby turtle upside down on the beach being pecked by seagulls. I wonder if vulnerability and acceptance are one and the same. I hear both of the words being thrown around by the most brutal of spirits. I see sacred doctrines altered for personal gain. I want justice and fairness for all. I'm a warrior. Acceptance, a foreign land to me most times. I pretend it's closer than it appears it to be in my mind's eye. I feel my heart longing for closure. I touch the heavens and see myself become energy, blending with all. I worry about it. I worry our energies will be drawn in different directions. I cry at night. I cry at the thought of not ever knowing. I'm a warrior fighting the fight, which only exists in my head. What I imitate, I create, believe, following only self and the higher self within the self. I dream of never saying the word self again. I try to laugh away the heaviness in hopes of that the sun shines on everyone, even for just a few minutes each day. I'm a warrior upon a mountain of toxic trash and plastic, waiting to awaken from the nightmare called ultimate disrespect and greed. There are some things which just don't, shouldn't be accepted. End poem.
Fantastic poem, Pam 8. And Pam Ray, would you like to comment?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the interesting thing about acceptance is that there is a positivity to acceptance and there's a negativity to it. She touched things very well on both. She touches both to accept. You know, we need to accept the idea of finding a balance and harmony. And also that I accept things we cannot accept, that we as warriors, and I like that she says that I am a warrior, we can't accept people who abuse each other, abuse life, and abuse Mother Earth through you know, littering and negative energy. You know, there's this real just sense of in this of what she will accept and what she will not accept. And I like how strong she is in her phrasing. I could have thought of not ever knowing I'm a warrior fighting a fight, which will imitate. I like that it created such a powerful statement on how our mind influences our surroundings. So excellent write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. And Dex, back to you.
Yeah, I enjoyed this write quite a bit. This piece, you know, the vulnerability. What it really kind of reminded me of too is kind of the water fight that was happening up at Standing Rock and things like that too. But I understand it was about the plastic bags and the negative impacts on our planets and things like that. But just the ultimate disrespect to what's happening all around. And Mother Earth, you know, and to living the fight and to want what's best for us, to understand that we are the future, we are a part of it, our kids are, you know, but it's all happening with us. This is just a very powerful write, and just like I said, I really enjoyed the angle that she took on it. So very well done. On this next one, I will ask you, Faziana, to read the next one.
Okay, I accept by Myriad Musings. I accept the mistakes that I've made in my past. I accept the consequences of which seem to last. I accept that I'm not perfect in the stones that I have cast. I accept that my fears have often ruled me. I accept that my mask is what most people see. I accept that my flaws are my beauty. I accept the truth is better than lies. I accept we all can be butterflies. I accept myself as my own damned prize. End poem. Ooh, I love the attitude of this. There's wonderful feeling when reading this. I get it, and I feel connected to it. And I really especially liked the truth is better than lies, even if the truth is hard. I accept that flaws are my beauty. This is something that I talked about earlier, where sometimes the things that we think are our imperfections are actually what makes us stand out. They're the things that are the best parts of us. Pam, what did you think?
I really like this. I like the repetitiveness of I accept, because there's such a sense of it being a mantra, and a powerful mantra of love and of acceptance. And I like that it's about accepting that we are all beautiful and unique in our own way, and that we all have flaws that we need to learn to embrace. So very well done.
And back to you, Dex.
Okay, I'm going to read the one that I wrote called Acceptance. Embracing the reality for what is, not what isn't. Fixating on the beauty of the path taken rather than the eternal tease of what could have been. Relaxing in the calming tide. No journey is perfect. Traveled without blemish, lived without heartache, destination achieved unscathed. Let the breeze of today soothe my yesterday and carry with it the scent of my true self into the dusk.
That's beautiful, Dexter. I really liked fixating on the beauty of the path taken rather than the eternal tease of what could have been. The eternal tease of what could have been is so true. And there's that kind of fear of missing out that people sometimes get stuck and don't move forward in any direction because they're so afraid of committing to one thing and missing what could be another possibility. It's a big thing I think like online dating has become a big part of it. It's like people don't commit. They are stuck on like, oh, but there's all of these options out there. And this is like a way more pretty take on that, but it's that concept of like there's the tease of what could have been or what could be, and you can just instead live in the moment and experience what you're doing and what you're going towards and not worry about all those things that you might have missed. I like, let the breeze of today soothe my yesterday and carry it with the scent of my true self into the dusk. It's a really eloquent and kind of elegant ending. Pam,
what
were your thoughts? You're welcome.
Well, this is beautifully written, and I like the way that it speaks on the, you know, accepting and embracing the reality of the moment, you know, not over-focusing on what used to be or what could have been, but rather the whole idea of moving forward. And I really like that you say no journey is perfect, traveled without blemish, lived without heartache. You know, and it is both that heartache, those blemishes, those lessons learned that help to shape us as individuals and help us to become our true selves. So just an excellent brevity and very well done, Dexter.
Thank you. And on that note, it looks like we have a piece by B2 that you wanted to get to that has an audio.
Yes, that's right. So this was actually the winner from my contest from the previous show, but because it came in right at the end of the contest, it didn't get featured on the show for that contest, and I just didn't want to miss out on it because it's such a great piece. So the theme for that contest was imposter syndrome, and this is Captain B2, a.k.a. Bobby's poem.
The Uniformed Dilettante poem. Followers of time-honored tradition, from father to daughter it was passed, to serve with distinction their commission, their pride in the core was steadfast. Ever equipped to enter a conflict, constant training would always prepare to carry out any mission to interdict, she ready to go anytime, anywhere. Exercises and war games the cannon, the edge on her skills never dull. Uneventful years, they just ran on, entire career in a 20-year lull. Retired with accolade and kudo, far from conflict and safe from all harms, came to feel that the career was just pseudo, no experience with brandishing arms. Never was bloodied in battle, no rounds flying over her head, no charging into the fray, to the saber's rattle, to right, no right to sleep among honored dead. The uniforms now hang in the closet, the sea stories all that remain, no deployments or conflicts to posit, just a peacetime Marine as her claim. End poem. Author's note, I was an active duty Marine for 20 years, from 72 to 92, daughter of a United States Marine who served for 4 years in the 1st World Marine Division during World War II, wounded and survived the Battle of Peleliu in the Pacific. My entire career was during the longest period of peace our nation has ever had. I look at what today's Marines have been and are experiencing in the service of their country, and it makes me feel like a dilettante. Sea stories are anecdotes from someone's military career. Old joke, what's the difference between a fairy tale and a sea story? Well, sea story and a fairy tale. Fairy tale begins once upon a time and ends with, and they live happily ever after. And the sea story begins with, this is no bullshit, and ends with, it's been screwed up ever since. End of.
Thank you so much, Bobby, a.k.a. B2, Captain B2, for this poem. I really loved how she really got into the imposter syndrome of feeling like she didn't deserve her rank and her awards and all of the accomplishments because she wasn't active during the time of war. But, you know, she still did important things, and I don't think being in the military during a peaceful time is anything to be ashamed of. Peace should be our goal. So if she helped maintain the peace, if she contributed in that way, I think that that's an honorable thing, and I really just enjoyed the delivery and everything about this poem. So congratulations, Captain B2, on the gold. And Pam, do you have any thoughts on the poem?
Yes, definitely a well-deserved gold. I like the way she wrote this. It felt so personal. It was raw. It was honest and heartfelt. And you know, I really, you know, I think everybody who serves, you know, whether it's during times of conflict or times of peace, you know, deserves to have a respect and thanks given to them, because you know, you don't know that you're going to serve in the longest time of peace ever. Just a wonderful personal write all the way through, and very well done.
Dexter, do you have any comments for Captain B2?
Yes, this reminded me a lot of my father or my dad. You know, it was he talked about, you know, he was in the military during Vietnam, and he happened to test highly enough that he was just stationed in Washington, D.C. as a diesel mechanic. But he says, and you know, everybody would think, you know, it would go, oh, that you're glad that you did it. And he could have been glad that he didn't serve over there. But he says that it's almost kind of haunted him in a way sometimes about that you signed up to fight, or that you were there to fight, or that, you know, that's a stupid thought to have. But you wanted to see what you had deep down in the fight in the battle, and you wanted to help, and you wanted to be a part of it. And that's a dumb thing to have, but that's why you're in the military. And I could feel that in B2. And I'm sure everybody she's ever talked to would say, you're just glad that you did it. You weren't a part of that. And that is true. But at the same time, though, you signed up because you believed in it and you got into it. And so I really connected with this, right, and I thought it was very well done.
That's all we have time for today. So thank you, Dexter, Pam, and Frank, for calling in. Thank you to everyone who submitted poems and audios. Thank you, Phil, for running behind the scenes and giving us this show. And I hope that I see everyone in my next contest, which I will post tomorrow.
Good night.